This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The U.S. is becoming even more isolated over its unequivocal support for Israel as its allies vote on a U.N. General Assembly resolution calling for a humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza. Palestine's Islamic Jihad movement says Israeli captives can be released only after the establishment of a permanent ceasefire in Gaza. And the Israeli threat of violence against Palestinians in the West Bank prompts Tel Aviv's European allies to call for sanctions. This is News. Thanks for joining us. The UN General Assembly has overwhelmingly voted in favor of a resolution that calls for an immediate, durable, and sustained humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza.
The result of the vote is as follows. 153 in favor, 10 against, 23 abstentions. Draft resolution A/ES10/L27 has been adopted.
The U.S. rejected the non-binding resolution while the U.K. abstained. The Palestinian presidency, meanwhile, welcomed this resolution, urging countries with a yes vote to oblige Israel to implement it. The Palestinian UN envoy, Riyad Mansour, also hailed the passage of the resolution as historic. The resistance movement Hamas also called on the international community to pressure Israel to abide by the resolution. It said that Israel should stop its aggression, genocide, and ethnic cleansing against Palestinians. Australia backed the latest UN General Assembly resolution on Gaza in a rare split with its close allies, the US and the UK.
Australia, alongside 152 other countries, was among the countries which voted in favour. In doing so, we joined Canada, New Zealand, Japan, France and India, and many other countries. Australia appreciates the bringing forward of this resolution by the Arab group, and we not acknowledge the gravity of the Secretary-General invoking Article 99. And in doing so, we have said Israel must respect international humanitarian law. Civilians and civilian infrastructure, including hospitals, must be protected. The resolution we have supported is consistent with the position we have previously outlined on these issues.
Wong said that UN members see pauses in fighting as a critical step on the path to a sustainable and permanent ceasefire. On Friday, the U.S. vetoed a ceasefire resolution proposed in the UN Security Council that called for a ceasefire in Gaza. The U.S. was the only country to reject the ceasefire call. It came after the UN chief, Antonio Guterres, invoked the rarely used Article 99 of the UN's charter to raise attention on Gaza. There has been increasing international pressure on Israel and its key backer, the U.S., to end the genocide in Gaza. The spokesman for the Al-Quds Brigades, the military wing of the Islamic Jihad movement, says the release of Israeli prisoners is possible only through indirect negotiation and after the establishment of a permanent ceasefire. Abu Hamza said that if Israel does not accept the resistance conditions, its prisoners will be killed under the regime's continuing bombardment of Gaza. He said if all the forces on earth come together, they won't be able to free a single prisoner. Abu Hamza said that by prolonging the war in Gaza, the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, seeks to remain in power and evade the tragic fate of his tenure. He also said no matter how long the war in Gaza lasts, the resistance will not surrender. Abu Hamza said the resistance is determined to achieve victory in the current war. Well, the Israeli military has confirmed the loss of 10 more of its personnel during the ground operation in the Gaza Strip. An Israeli military spokesman says the soldiers were killed in clashes with Palestinian resistance fighters. since the onset of Israel's ground invasion of Gaza on October the 27th. The regime has lost 115 troopers. Palestinian resistance groups believe that the figure is higher, as Israel hides the real number of its military casualties. Meanwhile, Hamas's military wing, the Al-Qassam Brigades, has fired a barrage of missiles at Israel's Reim military base. That's the latest in attacks by the resistance groups against Israeli positions in response to the genocide in Gaza. Was day 68 of the Israeli genocide in Gaza, where indiscriminate airstrikes have taken a heavy toll on people and on civilian structures, especially hospitals. Israeli forces have laid a heavy siege on Al-Auda and Kamal Adwan hospitals in northern Gaza, with a number of Palestinians killed and injured. According to the Palestinian Health Ministry, Israeli forces have abducted all men at the Kamal Adwan hospital, including member staff, patients, and those taking shelter. The ministry says that they have been taken to an unknown location. Meanwhile, 13 Palestinians have been killed in the latest Israeli airstrikes across Gaza. Over 18,600 people, mostly women and children, have lost their lives since the war began. Let's bring in Feruz Mithi Borwala, who is the National General Secretary at the India-Palestine Solidarity Forum, who joins us from Mumbai. Welcome to the program. Let's start with the UN General Assembly, where there was a vote in which the 153 nations were for this durable and sustained humanitarian ceasefire, as they described it, for it to take place, where, again, we have witnessed how that showed the U.S.'s isolation when it comes to this U.S.-Israeli genocidal war. And, of course, we know what happened at the previous U.N. Session, where, again, the U.S. Prevented a ceasefire from taking place. What does that say about the U.S. and its approach towards this genocidal war?
Horrendous, but this is not something new that the Americans have done, the U.S. has done. Time and again, we have witnessed the U.S. veto protecting Israel's interests and defending Israel's right to not defend itself, to commit a genocide. And this is a joint American-Israeli war on Palestine. It's not only an Israeli war. The weapons, the bunker busters, the massive bombs that are coming in, technology is all coming in from the Americans and the Brits and the French. So this is basically a European-American war on, and the European nations themselves are complicit in this war, but they are all complicit in the Holocaust. In fact, I don't even call it a just war. We are witnessing the Holocaust of the Palestinian people being perpetrated by the Israelis and the Americans.
So when it comes to this U.S.-Israel genocidal war at this point in time, where it's over, it's past the 60-day mark, and the death toll, as shocking as it is, has increased now to about 18,600. There are many questions as to the reasons behind this war to continue. What do you think those reasons are?
Basically, the Israelis do not know what to do in this war. They do not know how to defeat the resistance. All that they can do is massacre the families, the people, the civilians, the schools, the colleges, the mosques, the churches. That is all that they can do. Mark Regev has no figures on how many Hamas fighters have they killed. They have no idea of the number of resistance fighters they have actually killed. So the desperation, the arrogance of the colonial occupier is evident on the streets of Gaza, where they are just massacring people, but they don't know how to defeat the resistance. So the Israelis believe that they laid a trap for the Hamas and the resistance on the 7th of October, the provocation that led to the 7th of October attack. But it is clearly that the Israelis are trapped in their own trap. They are entrapped in their own trap. There is no way the resistance have gone into the West Bank and defeated them. So the Israelis have walked into Gaza, and they don't know how to walk out. And this is such a small little area of land. In 1967, I believe that in 2 hours, Israel had taken over Gaza. It has been over 60 days, over 2 months of a small territory of land, only 23 lakh people. Okay, overwhelming 40 to 50% being children. And the combined might of Israel and America, with all their fancy technological weapons and weapons of mass destruction, cannot defeat a small population. This should have been a two-day job going by the history we witnessed. But as it was the case in Lebanon in 1982, where after 18 years they had to walk out, or in 2006 when they again were defeated by the Hezbollah in Lebanon in the 35-day war, or early in Gaza when they were defeated by the Hamas in 2005, and in that time Hamas did not even have the kind of strength that they have. But today, after 60 days, Israel has lost the war on the ground. Israel has lost the narrative in the world. Today, Israel is more hated and more isolated than any time in its history of the last 75-odd years. And America itself is heading for deep isolation. Today, it is interesting that even America, France, Canada, Australia are now moving away from the American Biden position. So the small countries like Papua Guinea and Nauru and Micronesia and only Hungary and not in Hungary this time, I believe it is just Austria and the Czech Republic, I believe. That is about the only countries left with the Americans on this question. So it is deep. Both America and Israel are deeply isolated. They have no idea till this war is going on. So, yes, so they are in a deep political crisis. They are in a deep, deep political crisis. And now with Israel trying to venture into the Red Sea, having placed its own warship, trying to take on the Ansarullah, Israel is going to face a bashing in Yemen also. I mean, they're crazy. They're just out of their mind. They don't know what to do anymore.
Indeed. Thank you very much. Firuz Mithi Borwala, National General Secretary of the India-Palestine Solidarity Forum. Thanks. Moving on, German sportswear giant Puma has decided to end the sponsorship contract with Israel's football team next year amid the growing boycott call of the regime over its genocide in Gaza. The company said the decision is based solely on business reasons, but leaked internal messages reveal that Puma was under tremendous pressure to drop the contract that was made in 2022. A pro-Palestinian group known as Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions, or BDS Movement has hailed the announcement. It also thanked Palestine solidarity groups that called for the boycott of Israeli-linked firms. Puma has been the target of the international BDS movement since the year 2018 over the company's support for Israel. Its stores have been targeted by protesters in recent weeks over its brand's contract with the Israel Football Association. Activists have accused Puma of supporting Israeli settlements on occupied Palestinian territories. They say that the company is complicit in Israel's apartheid and ethnic cleansing of Palestinians. Israel spares no effort in causing further misery for Palestinians. The regime has razed a residential building in the occupied West Bank, which is said to have all the permits required.
I've been living here since 2014. This building contains four homes, two floors. The two floors are home to 30 people, including a disabled man. Since 2014, we have been paying tickets. We paid a lot of money for lawyers and engineers. We knocked all doors, we reached an agreement to organize the land, and we are now organizing and preparing it as they requested. We have agreements and maps.
The latest demolition took place in East Al-Quds. Israel routinely destroys Palestinian homes and structures, citing different pretexts, including the lack of construction permits. Palestinians, however, say that this is a pretext to seize their lands to expand illegal settlements. Israeli settlers backed by regime forces constantly attack Palestinian towns, setting ablaze their cars, buildings, and fields. The atrocities have prompted the EU's top official to call for sanctions against Israeli settlers.
The rise of extremist settler violence is inflicting immense suffering on Palestinians. It undermines prospects for lasting peace and could further aggravate regional instability. That's why I support sanctioning those involved in attacks in the West Bank.
The EU chief was addressing lawmakers in Parliament in Strasbourg. The remarks are made amid escalating settler violence in the West Bank. More than 700,000 Israeli settlers currently live on occupied Palestinian territories. These settlements are illegal under international law, and the UN Security Council has criticized them in several resolutions, but no sanctions have ever been imposed on Israel. Meanwhile, there is no let-up in Israeli raids across the occupied West Bank. The regime's forces have attacked the Palestinian city of Jenin for the second consecutive day. Israeli forces pressed ahead with their mass detention campaign in Jenin, including in the city's refugee camp. Israeli troops also maintained their siege of Jenin's public hospital for the second day in a row, blocking ambulances' access there. On Tuesday, regime forces, backed by armored vehicles and bulldozers, attacked the Jenin refugee camp and killed at least seven people. Israeli soldiers also obstructed medics that rushed to the scene to treat the injured.
This morning, we were informed of a rocket attack, so we immediately responded. On our way to the location of the attack, the Israeli military stopped us and checked our IDs and the ambulances. This kept us from attending to the injured on time and aggravated their condition. And eventually, four injured people died. On our way back while transporting the martyrs, the Israeli military prevented us from entering the hospitals before checking our IDs and the ambulances. This is common practice whenever the Israeli military enters the city of Jenin and its refugee camp.
The Israeli military carries out raids on Palestinian cities and refugee camps frequently. Regime forces attack and detain people and block ambulances access to hospitals. Tel Aviv has stepped up its attacks across the occupied territory since October 7, when the regime launched its onslaught on Gaza. Since then, Israeli forces and settlers have killed more than 280 Palestinians and detained hundreds more in the occupied West Bank. Americans have held new rallies in New York City to express solidarity with Palestinians and to condemn pro-Israel stances of some media outlets and firms, including the New York Times, Citigroup, and Starbucks. The protesters called for a halt to the Israeli genocide in Gaza and a permanent ceasefire there. They also deplored the Citibank for investing in Israel's infrastructure and facilitating billions of dollars in military funding for the regime. They demanded that Citibank acknowledge the ongoing genocide in Gaza and push for a lasting ceasefire. Calls are also growing to boycott Starbucks, which has distanced itself from its workers' union support for the Palestinians. The protesters also gathered outside of the headquarters of New York Times to condemn its stance on Palestine. The support for Gaza has grown further since the U.S. vetoed a U.N. Security Council resolution on a Gaza ceasefire last week. Meanwhile, in the U.K., hundreds of pro-Palestinian protesters gathered in Westminster, calling on the government to push for a ceasefire in Gaza amid a worsening humanitarian crisis there. Protesters accused the British government of supporting Israeli genocide in the besieged territory.
18,000 people are dead in Gaza. 18,000 people, 8,000 of those are children. If that doesn't make anyone think this is wrong, then that person is soulless and heartless, i.e. those people in there eating, drinking, having a laugh with the genocide-endorsing Labour Party.
The Palestinian foreign minister has condemned Israel for its deliberate use of starvation as a weapon of war against Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip.
As we speak, at least 1 million Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, half of them children, are starving. Not because of a natural disaster or because of lack of generous assistance waiting at the border. No, they are starving because of Israel's deliberate use of starvation as a weapon of war against the people it occupied.
Maliki was speaking at a UN meeting in Geneva. He deplored the international community for inaction toward the situation in Gaza. The Palestinian diplomat warned of the condition that deprives the Palestinians from the most basic rights afforded to all human beings. He said that it was, quote, utter international failure in protecting the Palestinians. Israel has imposed total blockade of the Gaza Strip, cutting the flow of food, fuel, water, medicine, and electricity into the besieged territories. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of World News. Thanks for being with us. It's bye-bye for now.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Al-Aqsa Storm Aftermath. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. October 7th, 2023 was a turning point in the history of the West Asian region, and it will remain forever. On that day, the combatants of the Palestinian Hamas movement launched a surprise attack against the Zionist regime and imposed the biggest defeat on the regime since its illegitimate birth 75 years ago. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, dubbed the defeat as an irreparable defeat. Dear listeners, we are going to review the issue in a special series with a focus on the Al-Aqsa Storm and its consequences. Stay tuned for another part, please. Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, in a recent speech called the United States as a partner of the Zionist regime in the latter's crimes against the Palestinian people, saying, "In this event, the U.S. is the definitive partner of criminals. I mean, the U.S. hands are plunged in the blood of the innocent, the children, patients, women, and so on. As a matter of fact, it is somehow administering these crimes that are being committed in Gaza. It is the U.S. which is administering." Analysts, lawyers, officials from various countries and global institutions have announced that the Zionist regime is arbitrarily and knowingly doing genocide in Gaza. Yet, it is a matter of astonishment that no serious reaction in an international level has been done against this brutal regime. The main reason for this is that most of the international organizations and their affiliated bodies are under the diabolical dominance of the great Satan, the US. The United States and its allies in Europe have always repeated the threadbare lie of legitimate defense to explain the Israeli crimes against Palestinians. Article 51 of the UN Charter emphasizes the right to legitimate defense. It reads, "Nothing in the present charter shall impair the inherent right of individual or collective self-defense if an armed attack occurs against a member of the United Nations, until the Security Council has taken measures necessary to maintain international peace and security. Measures taken by members in the exercise of this right of self-defense shall be immediately reported to the Security Council and shall not in any way affect the authority and responsibility of the Security Council under the present charter to take at any time such action as it deems necessary in order to maintain or restore international peace and security." Americans, according to this article of the UN Charter, claim that the Zionist regime has the right of self-defense after October operation of Hamas. According to the U.S. interpretation of the UN articles, The flagrant genocide of the people of Gaza by Israel is called the right to self-defense. Thus, from the first hours of the recent war in Gaza, Washington entered the scene as the full supporter of the Zionist regime rather than a mediator and a neutral onlooker. Now, a few points should be clarified here. First of all, the Zionist regime is not a country to have the right to defend itself. It is an occupying regime which has usurped the Palestinian territories for over 75 years. Secondly, the attack of Hamas on October 7th was a natural response to 75 years of savagery, massacre, destruction, genocide, and every kind of crime committed by the fabricated regime. Even the UN Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, mentioned this when he said that there were reasons behind Hamas attacks. The fact is that after regaining of power by Benjamin Netanyahu and his highly extremist cabinet in the beginning of 2023, a new wave of violence and unbridled savagery started against Palestinians, so that the number of Palestinian martyrs during the 7 months of this year was more than the whole 2022 year. In view of this, what Hamas did was the right of self-defense. However, in a repeated scenario, the United States has vetoed the UNSC resolution for stopping massacre of Palestinians and a starting of sending humanitarian aids to Gaza. Thus, the U.S. has vetoed over 50 UNSC resolutions against the Zionist regime. Since the start of the recent war, too, 4 out of 5 of the UNSC resolutions have been vetoed by the U.S., Britain, and France. After 40 days, the 5th resolution was passed, which the U.S. voted neutral to it. Although the UN General Assembly and the UNESCO are the bodies where these anti-Israeli resolutions have been ratified unanimously, it is the UNSC which is the executive body for these resolutions. The only resolution which was ratified without condemning Israel for its crimes in Gaza has just asked for temporary ceasefires for humanitarian aids. The U.S. wielding of the veto power has both discredited the UNSC and given the green light to the Zionist terrorist army to continue the mass murdering and genocide of civilians in Gaza and the West Bank. Another measure that the United States took to support the Israeli crimes was to threaten the Arab and Islamic countries to avoid any move against the Zionist regime. The U.S. officials have traveled to West Asia and met with regional officials several times since October 7th. These trips have been focused on refraining from any measures whatsoever against Israel. The leader of the Yemeni Ansarullah movement, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, said in this regard, "Americans have pressured the Arab and Islamic countries to avoid any practical assistance to the people of Gaza. Meanwhile, Americans have sent warships and fighters to the region to prove they will throw their support for the fake Zionist regime in case of any threat. Although most of the Arab and Islamic states have shown for the past decades that they would not take any tangible measure against Israel, the U.S. recent pressures have intimidated them further. The U.S. and European performance in the face of the tragedy in Gaza revealed the nasty reality of the Western communities and proved the mendacity of their claims on rights and freedom." Dear listeners, next time we will continue the discussion.
the ocean of dua.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll adopt a thematic approach towards supplication, and we'll have a look at supplication from the point of view of different verses of the Holy Quran. And we'll also have a look at some parts of the transmitted supplications as well as the whispered prayers. So stay with us. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil. Brothers and sisters, after we counted and discussed the different effects for supplications, different advantages for supplications, we said that we must be aware of some points. The fact is that there are some hindrances on the way to supplication that Imam Ali alayhi salam specifically mentions them in the Kumail supplication. Imam says that there are some obstacles on the way of supplication that if are not removed by the supplicant, there will be definitely no response to the supplication. So concerning this issue, I mean the issue of hindrances and obstacles on the way of response to the supplications, there is a tradition narrated from Ma'az ibn Jabal from the Prophet ﷺ that refers to these most important obstacles on the way of supplication. In that tradition, the Holy Prophet ﷺ refers to the innate aspects of the affairs, I mean those aspects that are unknown even by the angels. In this tradition, the obstacles are enumerated. Prophet ﷺ says, backbiting one's brothers in religion is one important hindrance. And the Prophet ﷺ starts to count many other obstacles. An action through which God's servant wishes to gain some worldly benefits. Pride. Jealousy towards those who engage in knowledge and practice. Lack of mercy towards the others. Action through which a God's servant wishes publicity. An action which is not carried out for the sake of God. Belittling the others by being a macromaniac. Referring to the others' filth by pretending to be clean. Not providing for the hereafter in this world. Finding faults with the others, whispering in the presence of the others, being malevolent towards the others. These are all the collections of the obstacles that we need to be aware of. This inventory is a collection of obstacles before the acceptance of our actions. It is clear that these things can be considered as impediments in the way of supplications. This is because supplication is itself a kind of worship, and what actually supplication does is that it takes us closer to God, and it is responded if it is accepted. But if it fails to function properly, it naturally will not be accepted.
Why do we make supplication? And why do we call out to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Is it because God is not aware of our needs? God is Al-Alim. He knows all of our needs. Is it because God needs convincing? God is known as Al-Jawad, He is the source of generosity, then why am I making dua to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? The dua is a journey of realizations. When a person goes to the ocean and he takes with him a bucket that can carry 4 liters of water, the ocean is infinite. In as much as your vessel is large, that is the amount of water that the ocean will give you. And therefore, our goal is to expand our capacity. Rumi has a very beautiful poem. He says, "Har khujo mushkil javab anjo ravad." Wherever there is a problem, that is where the answer will come. Har khujo kashti ab anjo ravad. Wherever there is a vessel, that's where the water will come. Ab kamju tishnagi avar bedas. Don't go seeking for water. Instead, create the thirst within you. Ta beju shad abaz bala bakas. So that the water may burst forth from above and from below you. Experience that realization that you need God, and the merciful God will come towards you. Paradise, thank you Allah, that we hear, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God speaks with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
Brothers and sisters, the school of supplication has many different features in which sublime intentions are set by the sacred legislator to educate people. From now on, we will list some of them and try to discuss some aspects of these features, educating people to be completely functional in their societies and actually help all the people to be from among the perfect men. The first objective, which is one of the most significant features in the sphere of education, is the fact that in all supplications, we may not find a case where the causation is referred to non-God or non-divine names. I mean, in other words, in all these supplications, the absolute cause is God. Nothing, no one other than the Almighty Allah can ever take place without his consent. Among the divine knowledge and sciences, the closest science to this school is Gnosticism, which ascribes to God the cause of creating all the creatures, and that every creature in the world stems from one of God's positions and features. So, one of the features of the infallible Imams of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam is to guide their followers towards the Supreme God. Regarding this issue, we will refer to some supplications, and this will lead us to appreciate the magnificent content of the sacred texts of the Ahlul Bayt. Of course, in each supplication, only those parts we will refer that are crucial to our argumentation. So from now on, we will have a look at the most significant features that actually cause education of human beings, that actually educate perfect men in the school of supplications. In the next episode, inshallah, we'll start discussing them. Thank you for staying with us. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye. Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah. Ya Allah, ya Allah, don't let me go astray, cause I need you by my side. I wish to be close, close to you.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
In a shocking yet not surprising development, the U.S. House of Representatives has recently declared in a resolution that anti-Zionism is the same as anti-Semitism. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV noted the Republicans drafted the resolution passed by a 311-14 vote with 92 representatives voting present. The resolution sought to box in as many representatives as possible under threats of labeling dissenters as anti-Semitic. From the very get-go, run-of-the-mill Republicans and staunch Zionist Democrats went on the offensive. reiterating their false equivalency of anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism in order to continue the unfettering shipment of arms to the Zionist regime. Republicans used the resolution as a battering ram against Democrats in order to make them fall in line or face smears as anti-Semites. Ironically, this is the same party that has a roster of so-called free speech absolutists. They should add an asterisk to that title that says only if you are a Zionist. Although many Democrats admit to being adamant Zionist, some are a little less enthusiastic or even critical to equate anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism. Some rightly identify Zionism as a political ideology but fall short of addressing its colonial roots and corrosive doctrine that includes ethnic cleansing. To invoke Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, muddying the waters about what anti-Semitism is completely wrong and unhelpful. The U.S. political machine's ideological alignment with the Israeli occupation, of course, is inherently rooted in money. Weapons manufacturers such as Boeing and Raytheon make billions through arms deals with the apartheid regime. Through massive affiliate lobbying, these death-dealing corporations can have a unique say in U.S. foreign policy, which is what defines their illicit relationship. On top of the nearly $4 billion the U.S. sends in military aid to the Tel Aviv regime yearly, the U.S. has sent an additional $10 billion in aid since October 7th, which includes lethal bunker buster bombs that have resulted in the death of thousands of Palestinians. For U.S. politicians, this resolution makes it abundantly clear. If genocide is business, business is good. But business can also have its hurdles. This resolution could have easily been passed almost any year since the creation of the occupying entity, despite a 1975 UN resolution defining Zionism as racism, now discarded. Is the resolution being passed because of the severity of the humiliation the Zionist regime was dealt on October 7th by the Palestinian resistance led by Hamas? If that was the case, the resolution could have been passed the numerous times the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah served the Israeli regime humiliating defeats over the years. It could have been raised during the first Gaza war. So, why now? The answer lies in the changing societal fabric of the United States. In the crossroads of the resolution are college campuses. Since the outbreak of the Al-Aqsa Storm, also known as the Al-Aqsa Flood, student groups in solidarity with the Palestinian cause have become pivotal in bringing Palestine to the forefront and center of American college life. These student groups have held teach-ins, boycotted Zionist professors, and held massive demonstrations and walkouts with demands to not only end the aggression on Gaza, but bring forth an end to U.S. aid for the regime that is aiding the genocide of Palestinians in Gaza. Outside of that, groups of all ages that are supplemented by college groups have marched to the tune of millions across the country, not demanding a liberal two-state solution, but rather an end to the occupation. This is a much-needed development for the Palestinian cause, a development that shakes Zionists to the core. In a leaked clip first obtained by Tehran Times, the head of the Zionist group Anti-Defamation League, Jonathan Greenblatt, noted that a serious threat the Israeli regime lobby faces is not between the political left and right, but rather young and old, as young people are slowly starting to be disillusioned with their government's support for the occupation regime. For Zionists like Greenblatt, the college campuses, and indeed even high school campuses, could be a potential threat to the regime's fake image. With the young unapologetically supporting the Palestinian cause, the lifeline of the Zionist regime that relies on U.S. taxpayer money begins to dwindle. It's no surprise that as this resolution passes, Ivy League schools that saw a rise in Palestine solidarity actions are being grilled by U.S. Congress. Presidents of these schools now face accusations of fostering anti-Semitism as they allowed pro-Palestine demonstrations on the campus. The resolution has the capability of setting serious precedents within U.S. law norms. If college campuses or other public institutions that rely on federal funding to operate do not comply with norms that battle calls against prejudice and racism, said funding can be pulled. Thus, with this resolution, the institution itself would be incentivized to silence anti-Zionists. Meanwhile, Zionist politicians get to set double standards as they co-sign a license for the genocide of Palestine. It is worth mentioning that the bill was co-sponsored by Congressman Max Miller, who in the early days of the aggression in Gaza said he wanted to see Gaza turned into a parking lot. The anti-Palestinian rhetoric can be found all over the resolution. It even goes on to comment on specific popular slogans used at protest to equate them as anti-Semitic. The first part of the document states, "From the river to the sea," which is a rallying cry for the eradication of the State of Israel and the Jewish people, has been used by anti-Israel protesters in the United States and globally. For the uninitiated, this slogan simply refers to the end of the apartheid occupation system that Palestinians are subjected to today, in and day out. Its origins mention nothing of the eradication of Jewish people. Furthermore, the resolution incorrectly paints a peaceful protest as a violent one. Earlier in November, anti-Zionist Jewish activists held a peaceful protest at the Democratic Party headquarters with demands for a ceasefire in Gaza.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.